All right, it's another Wednesday night, and we're back.
Hello.
Still don't have a good intro, so.
Another week, another podcast.
Yeah, it's pretty much our intro, another week. It's Wednesday night, so here we are, right?
Yep.
Yeah. The weather still sucks.
Crazy cold, May, yeah.
Right? It's 9 degrees right now.
it's not okay.
It is not. I meant to Google. No, this could have been the intro. I meant to Google like historical temperatures, May temperatures, Southern Ontario, just to see.
Yeah.
Like maybe this is normal and we just forget after being crappy for so long. But I never did it. But it just feels cold, right? All the time.
I'm sure it's just lulling us into a false sense of security.
Yeah, yeah. It's gonna snow on the long weekend. Oh, you know what? Hold on. I just noticed one technical issue. My mic is insanely low again. The Mac has pulled its regular input shenanigans. So hold on one sec.
A classic.
Yeah, it's just decided input volume should be 50%.
I finally got mine working first try today, so I was happy about that.
You know, I wouldn't have even noticed. I happened to glance over and the broadcast software has like a little sound level bar.
And
I was like, mine is very low and that's going to be a pain to try to correct afterwards. So, all right, there we go. All right. As usual, we have no intro. Well, we have a good intro song. We have no real intro to start the show.
No.
And I always have our intro is really my technical issues.
Hmm.
That's it. That's
a little
our,
in media res.
Yeah.
Starting action.
Go. Yeah. Perfect. All right. We have a lot of articles to get through. Let's start like regular with the AWS news. These are again in no particular order. I've just kind of thrown them in my little cheat sheet outline. Let's start with the Q developer end of support. You want to kick us off with this one?
Sure. So, I mean, it's exactly what it says on the tin. If you're using Queue Developer, it will no longer be supported.
Yeah.
But I don't think this is surprising, right? Like, this is just Kiro superseding it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? When you shared this article, I was like, oh, yeah, it's taking that long? Okay.
It's still around?
It's still around, yeah. I honestly didn't No, although actually that's not entirely true because it'll be interesting to see what happens with some of the branding. Like I know I hope I'm not messing this up, but like I'll go to the Kiro console and maybe this has changed. So I have a customer that has Kiro Pro licenses for some of their devs. And when you go there, you kind of land on a Kiro landing page and then have to click Kiro settings. So I wonder if that's also been changed. I haven't gone in there for a while, so there's some weird little crossover that I wonder if it still exists. I don't know.
Yeah, that's weird. I have to go check now because I know I signed up our team for Q last year. I don't think anyone's used it except for me.
You know
but
what?
Regardless,
yeah, you know
it might
what?
Be bumbled into Kiro.
Yeah, you know what you should do is Kiro does have a good, That might be generous. It has a usage page, which at least tells you, hey, you've got X number of people signed up. So you can look that up and then you can see how many of those people, not the person, but it says you've got 5 licenses and 1 is being used kind of thing on a regular basis. That was the other problem. You know what? It's funny. That's the other problem I had with this customer. We got some credits to try it out and everybody's like, yeah, let's try it out. So I was like, okay, we provision everybody through SSO, right? Set all that up. There's one person that uses it.
Well, it's like Claude with the MCP, like the AWS MCP is as good or better, right?
Yeah.
Like, or an open code is even better still, in my opinion. Like,
it's
almost not worth bothering with.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Eh? It's like, although I really do like the Kiro CLI. I get a little lost when it sort of sometimes just disconnects from my terminal. It's got I know it's really silly. It's got the autocomplete. It knows all the AWS commands. So as I'm typing, it's like, you mean this? And I'm like, you're actually right, that's exactly what I want. And I just hit enter, right, and move on with my day. So it's really good for that. But I you know, whatever. I don't know. Yeah. I think it's an uphill battle.
It is. I need to try Kiro a little more, I think, because I've used it maybe a couple times and I've almost immediately went back to Claude, Codex, OpenCode, but
yeah.
I can add a fifth
terminal agent
in my coding agent in my life. Yeah, why not?
The other thing you should try, because I really want your opinion on it, and I know we're totally off track already. We haven't made it through the first story, is Amazon Q Desktop.
Okay. That's the quick desktop, or is that a separate thing?
Oh, sorry.
Thing?
Did I say? I said Q. Look, I'm already getting mixed up. Okay. Amazon Quick Desktop. Yes, the little Codex app sort of agent thing, very similar. So it's neat, but I'm struggling with it. The same way that, like, it seems every week when we're talking about Codex, I say I should do this. I should try this more, and then I don't. So yeah, I want you to try it so you can tell me if you think it's worth my time or not. Because I do I need something else? I don't know.
I'll give it a try and I'll report back next week. I have this. I've been trying out I don't know. Have you heard of the Pi agent?
I have, but I haven't tried it. I've seen it in a couple of YouTube videos and stuff like that. It's starting to sort of the YouTube algorithm is deciding that it needs to show me that stuff now. So
you're in the in the Pi space now.
Yeah. That and food videos loosely camouflaged as camping.
Oh, nice.
Right? You know, look at me. I'm in the middle of nowhere, but I'm going to, like, cook 2 prime rib steaks and stuff. I'm you hauled all that stuff in.
You're in the outdoor voice feed.
Yeah. Brutal. I got to watch the opposite of that stuff to reset the algorithm. It's polluting my, I don't know.
Indoor...
indoor live coding. It's like
live the coding. There you
exact
go.
Opposite. Yeah.
Well, it's because it's like you're kind of there then. You got both.
Yeah, I got both. Yeah. I got a little bit of both. All right. So poor Q, you know, really gone before it got an opportunity.
Yep.
Yep. Gone. You shared a great quality of life one. The IAM increased quotas.
Hmm.
Again, this is kind of like almost the same take as the last one. It's like, it says it right in the headline. It's just, hey, quotas are increased for IAM.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where has it been? Yeah. It's good. It's a good change.
Yeah.
It does kind of make me think that maybe it's incentivizing like a kind of a AWS architectural smell, which is like too much in one account situation.
Hmm.
But you know, if you need it, then it's there. You have more space.
Have you ever bumped into an IAM quota limit?
I have.
Really?
I have bumped into that before, yeah. In
wow.
certain cases, yeah, you'll have, for certain architectures, you'll have like regional deployments, right?
Yeah.
And that'll be like the place of the central hub for your customers in that region. So you can get into a point where you have enough customers if you're provisioning rules for each one, where you can start to bump into the limit, right?
But okay. Yeah.
It's very rare.
Yeah. I've never bumped into it. So, you know, you'll probably, if I do bump into it, it'll probably be like tomorrow afternoon because I said I've never had this problem and I'm trying to extend the long weekend. So about 3:30, 4 o'clock tomorrow, I'll have some weird stuff. I'll be like, what's going on? Oh, I am quota, son of a... There goes my weekend, right? So, yeah. let's see. What else is here? I'm going to jump over a couple. We'll come back to them. There's another kind of, is it quality of life? The AWS security agent can now do full repo-wide code reviews.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right?
Could it not before? That's kind of surprising.
I guess not. The only thing I ever tried with it, remember, like, I don't know, a month ago now, I did the, I wanted to call it a vulnerability scan, but not a vulnerability scan, a
like a pen test.
Pen test. Thank you. Yeah. I ran that pen test against Open Brain, I think it was. But that was the only thing that I've ever tried. So I do remember seeing in the console that you could connect it to a repo. But
yeah.
I never bothered. I just wanted to kind of see what it would do on the pen test side.
Okay, so maybe they were just doing like static analysis or running, you know, scans for known malware, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But now it's actually doing code review, so
yeah, I don't
interesting.
Know. I so think I probably, I think this would be another one that's probably a good thing to kick the tires, right?
Yeah. No. Yeah, I got to find an excuse to deploy this somewhere and use it.
Yeah,
because right? Like, it's pretty, like, depending on the, okay, so depending on the repo, it's relatively, it could be relatively cheap to run this, like, quarterly, like we talked about, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, $250 or whatever.
Yeah, like, the pen tests, what did I say? Like, it took, oh, man, I could go to Open Brain right now and find it, but, like, it took a couple hours, maybe 3-4 hours to run the pen test. And I think the next week we talked, we said like, you know, $250 or whatever, if you paid for it, you get that 60-day free or whatever. This might be, again, you know, I was thinking about this one and I was like, remember before I said, hey, I use one agent to do a lot of the development work and then I have another agent kind of review it. That's kind of the same take that I had with this is if you're doing a lot of, vibe coding and or agentic coding, whatever you want to call it, right? Where you're maybe writing less of the code, having something that's watching that and reviewing it, I would just consider that to be an investment again, more than anything.
Yeah, especially if you're deploying to like to production, like you're serving actual customers who are paying you actual money.
yeah, you would want to make sure that's good, right?
The rare vibe coder who's actually charging or deployed a product, you know. But
you know, it's really funny. Okay, so I'm gonna tell a story. So I've got a buddy who is writing applications for people now. Using he's gonna hate me if he won't ever listen to this anyways. I was gonna say he's gonna hate me when he listens to this. I don't know what he's using. I wanna say Codex, but now as I was gonna say it, I'm like maybe not, but he's writing little like very specific applications for people, right? Like he's not writing a CRM, but he's writing very like industry specific solutions for people, helping them design them and stuff like that. And he's been doing it for a while. He's having a lot of fun, right? Not going to retire on the cash he's making or anything like that, but you know, he's like, hey, it's a great way to learn this stuff. And then I was talking to somebody else. And he said that he heard about somebody that doesn't really have a technical background, but has been in the IT industry for a long time, helping people with applications, all agentic coded, and in exchange for equity.
Okay. Interesting. Like,
okay, that's a model, right? I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I bet you it's probably common. More common than people want to talk about. I wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe.
Right?
Yeah, maybe especially, I mean, that's two cases in your personal group. Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we should be, should be doing some of that on the side.
Micro owners of all sorts of weird and wonderful small business applications. Who knows? I just thought it was kind of cool. It made me think of it because we were talking about just this idea of, hey, if you're generating all this code, it's great to have something that's helping you check if that code is good or not, right? The other thing that I wrote down on this one was it seems like everybody wants the tools now to help, well, very similar to what I just said, to help people verify or validate or, you know, feel more comfortable about the code that they aren't necessarily writing or seeing as much. You need that extra layer now, I think.
You do.
Yeah.
There's a million of those PR code review tools out there that connect to your GitHub repo and give you feedback, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, I think it's worth a shot, worth a try. You shared the Bedrock Agentic Payments. Agent Core, sorry, Payments Preview. It's funny that you shared this because I was going through the RSS feed and I was like, Agent Core, Agent Core, Agent Core. And I actually wrote in my notes, there's a lot of stuff changing on Agent Core. I think I counted like, I don't know if this is true. The number that pops in my head is like 6 maybe announcements in the last week, all related to sort of features or availability of features with Agent Core. It was,
yeah,
it was a large, like a surprising number actually. So walk us through release, the, yeah. yeah, right. Walk us through the payments preview.
So essentially what this entails is they're adding first party support to the Agent Core framework so that you can make agentic payments through, you know, MCP servers, your agents can pay for APIs, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's the main thing here. It's interesting. I don't know how much you want to connect your wallet to an agent yet, but I guess that that's where we're going. Once your email's in there, you might as well already, right?
Yeah. That was the first thing I wrote down. I'm like, you first.
Yeah.
Like,
I might let that one settle down for a while.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll wait for the horror stories to come out before I let an agent pay for shit for me. Well, we just talked about it with like that Andon Labs, right? Last week.
Yeah.
It was like ordering eggs. They can't cook the eggs. It's ordering like, what did order? Like 3,000 napkins? And they're like,
napkins, yeah.
Industrial garbage bags, a skid of something. Like it's spending. I always say like with AWS, I'm like, you have to surface the billing information because it's really easy to spend somebody else's money, right? Like if you're just like, I'm just going to spin this up, I'm going to spin that up, and yeah. you're not responsible for the bill. I'll leave that 32x large running. I don't care, right? And it's like this is I just like I'm not hooking anything into an agent that can pay for shit for me. I'll let somebody else do that first.
Yeah, I'm not jumping at the bit exactly to do this, no. But it is interesting.
Yeah,
it's the Coinbase protocol, so you can use crypto as well.
Well, that's what you're into, I guess. That makes it better.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. since you said crypto, sign me up.
Yeah, totally. Right?
Yeah. Oof. I don't know, but yeah. I don't know. I've been amazed this week how many Agent Core updates there's been. Kind of, they're really pushing it. Yeah, it kind of feels like the EC2s are now available in region X. I'm like, get it. I got it. Like
it's here. Yep.
There's Agent Core updates. I get it. So that's pretty neat, right? I do think, all joking aside, I think I need to spend more time with Agent Core. And just figuring out like how you assemble all the bits and pieces of it to use like to accomplish a goal. I think I need to spend some time with it.
Yeah, like I think there's stuff I'm trying to do with a coding harness or agentic harness that I'm writing that should have just been, had this come out like a month ago, should have just been in Agent Core.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's how it goes.
Yeah, it's and I'm so you know, I think that's the side effect of AI in general. It's moving so fast. You pick a direction and like the next week you're like, oh shit, I probably shouldn't have done that. But then if you were to go back in time, that offering that you have stumbled across may not have even been available. So I think the key is just, you got to be flexible, right?
Yeah.
And try some stuff. What else do we have here? I'm leaving that one to the end. You had also shared... Oh, yeah. We also have our other favorite Frontier agent. The DevOps agent has another update that you can do end-to-end agentic SRE now. Walk us through that one.
So this is essentially, and I guess what they mean by SRE is like the flagging of issues via telemetry and then tracing the logs and then proposing actions as well. But this was a really good blog post that came out this last week. And essentially they show you an architecture of how you can host this kind of autonomous SRE agent, right? Which is something we looked at it before as a kind of like, where do you put this, where does this fit into the system? And it's like, it's probably really good to have some kind of agent or a swarm of agents go through various log streams, various pieces of telemetry, go comb through all that data and try and find what the issue is when you detect like an alarm in the system, right?
Yeah.
That's essentially what's going on here.
I'm going to say the same thing like with this, as I said with a lot of these things, it needs to be on my to-do list. And it is, but it just keeps getting bumped down the list because other things are taking priority over it. But having, again, excuse me, just sort of the same thing we were just talking about with the security end of it, right? With the security agent, because some of these systems aren't being completely built by humans anymore, having that thing that's in there that, to your point, is, you know, combing logs, understanding, you know, maybe you've got trace data and stuff like that and log data, yeah. And just being able to kind of continuously look at that. Yeah, I kind of think it's almost going to be a cost of doing business again, these types of things.
Like this will probably be one of the main cloud ops tools going forward.
Yeah.
Like you would probably want to have something like this running in your system, whether that lives as like an MCP that you host and deploy, or whether it's like a terminal tool specifically built for cloud ops work.
Yeah.
There's probably some use here, but yeah, it's just like it's webhooks from CloudWatch into this agent and then kicking off investigation jobs essentially, and it's consuming Splunk and whatnot. So
yeah, pretty cool. Sorry, I've been jumping around this list here and now I'm like, what am I missing? Security DevOps. Oh, there was, I didn't understand this one actually. You can now run the Claude platform on AWS. And it was just a news release, right? Yeah. I couldn't find a blog post for it that kind of explained what it was. Like, I thought, well, what's the Claude platform? Like, what am I missing? And I think, and I hope I'm not wrong, I think they're basically just saying that you can run all of your Claude tools now on the AWS platform. And essentially, it sort of feels like almost like a marketplace play. Like, you're going to pay for this anyway, so pay through AWS because you're running all your other stuff there. I don't know if I'm misinterpreting it. It seems like Anthropic just sort of, or is it Anthropic or AWS? I always get this mixed up. Like just having the partner play, right? Like, you're already on AWS. You already use Claude. Just use it here. Pay for it here. I don't know if I'm misunderstanding. I don't know if you have any thoughts on it.
No, I think that's right. I think it's like their platform is like, they have Claude, they have Claude Code, they have the desktop app, but they also have managed agent workflows, I think, now
too.
Yes,
they do. They have managed agents,
So probably you're hooking into that as well. But it's important to think with this, like, you're connecting back into Anthropic systems. So if you care about where the data lives, take that into account versus Bedrock. That's the main difference.
Yeah.
Other than that, feels like a marketplace thing.
Yeah, I just pulled it up, and what you said is exactly it. It's like Claude platform on AWS is operated by Anthropic, and customers' data is processed out. Or sorry, Claude platform on AWS is operated by Anthropic, and customer data is processed outside of the AWS security boundary. Claude platform on AWS is designed for development teams and that want to access Anthropic's native cloud platform. Man, I don't know.
But it's a weird service.
Weird, right? And but you can use your existing credentials and access controls, consolidated billing, CloudTrail logging. So you're still leaving AWS. It's not like running within the AWS environment, but you're controlling access to it through AWS, right? You're billing
like
through AWS. Yeah, yeah. Maybe an endpoint.
Almost like a dedicated. Yeah.
Yeah. Weird, right? I couldn't wrap my head around it. But anyways.
Yeah, super weird.
Yeah. Weird. It just caught my eye because it said Claude. And I'm like, ooh, what's this? I'm going to go look. Yeah. Shiny. Yeah. Okay, let me just quickly. I think we got all the stuff there. Did I miss anything AWS news related that you may have shared in Discord and I missed?
No, I don't think so. Agent Core payments. Yeah, I think that's about it.
Okay. My favorite segment, personal projects.
Ooh,
How's the card game going? Did you continue work on it?
I did. So it's playable now. And next step is to get some playtest games in.
Yep.
So I'm going to see about hosting it. I'm debating whether to expose it publicly to make it easier for friends to playtest with. If I do, I might rope you in if you're interested.
Holler. I'll be a tester.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it works over like the wireless protocols work. I tested the server architecture, so I just spun up like a couple Docker containers essentially and had some bots play some games.
Yeah.
Across it works fine. So yeah, that's ongoing. Really cool. And then what else am I sucked into this week? Orbit Wars. I'm still stuck in Orbit Wars. It sucked me in.
What's Orbit Wars?
That's that Kaggle game
Oh,
or competition.
yeah. So you're
So
still exercising your programming
yep.
prowess, yeah, with real programming tasks.
Yep.
Wow, very good, very good. I've gone the exact opposite way. I still
Okay.
refuse to look at actual code. So I ran into a few interesting little bits and pieces over the last week. I am extremely sleep deprived at this point.
Okay.
I think my evening after this might just be slowly push my chair away from my desk and just go to bed. Like, I think I need some sleep. But I've been really kind of interested in the dispatcher piece of the Kanban, and I've been using it a lot, and it is really, really interesting. And to see, I've wired it up. I hard coded in the different card types, right?
Okay. Yep.
So I decided just to sort of defer trying to figure out like the router or the gateway piece, which I
Yeah.
still think would be a really cool, I'll call it a feature, but it's more of a learning exercise than anything, right?
There's something I saw actually that I wanted to
Yeah.
bring up to you about that. I
Okay.
think OpenRouter has a feature now where you can specify the tier of models. But anyways,
Oh, really? Okay.
and
Well,
that's something
I
I'll take a
put
look at.
Open Router in my sort of experimentation list. Like, I want to try it to figure out this sort of which model to use, especially to get into some more of the open weighted models and stuff like that we've talked about. But
Oh yeah.
this is I'm really happy with this now. I haven't really done a lot of coding tasks with it because I've gotten so used to just GitHub issues, and I guess they don't even call them issues anymore. I think they call them work items since the last patch. But
Yeah.
regardless, like just putting stuff in GitLab, and I've got my aptly named Go skill. So if I'm in the project, I just type Go, and
Just go.
it just goes. Like it just says, okay, it looks at all the issues, it pulls in the context that it needs. It's like I'm gonna start on this one, and it just does it, and I can just watch it streaming by over on the side of my monitor, right? So I think the idea of coding, sort of having code type cards, I don't know how much I'm gonna actually use that, but it led to the research stuff. And I bet you I have used that every single day, maybe multiple times a day since I was talking about it last week. And it's
Oh yeah.
just slick. Oh yeah. Like, I'm working on a problem right now where I was like, I have a load balancer timing out connections to something in the back end. And, it's the same old thing. I don't think it's AWS. They think it's AWS, so we end up in the battle of logs, right? So I took the entire email stream, dumped
Okay.
it into a card, tagged it as a research card, put a little note in there, and said, I need you to go and research this problem, right? Based on the thread that's happening here. And I think so, I said two or three scenarios that you think this might be. And then give me sort of what I should do next. Put it in a Kanban, called it, I don't know what I call it now. I think I call it agent ready. Click that, tell it
Yeah.
it's a research card, and go off and do something else. And
Launch.
yeah, it just fires up the container in ECS. I'm off doing something else, and then I get a little bing. And I'm like, oh, my food's done, and I go back over. For now, I still have to go back in the card, but I'm like, do I really want to go back into the Kanban card? I think I should get that out somewhere so that I don't have to
Yeah.
switch context, right? But anyways, dude, you should see this thing. It's all fucking markdown edited and like formatted so I can just easily read
Oh yeah.
it. Oh yeah, really, really slick. So I'm super happy with that. Like I'm constantly now just thinking of ways I could task it just to see what it would do, right? So that's really cool. I've had a lot of fun with that. Speaking of markdown, I basically reworked the whole Kanban to render Markdown properly. It was it was sort of working sometime. Yeah, it was it'd been a nightmare. It was sort of working, and then other times it wouldn't work. I'm like, what the hell's going on? So Claude and I went back and forth a little bit on that and got that solved. The other thing that I ran into was so I've talked a lot about Open Brain, right? The context of everything. And I ran into an interesting problem with those dispatch cards. So when I was tasking something in ECS, like, you know, I don't know how I actually could function without all of this additional context now. I know I'm chewing through tokens, right? Like, I get it. I'm consuming tokens, but I don't care what anyone says. I would consume those tokens for the higher quality responses that I believe I'm getting if I was to compare those things without a response without that additional context. I think,
The context is so essential if you want to get good results out.
Yeah, right? Incredible.
It's kind of funny, but it's like, it just exactly shows why like the SRE agent is probably a good idea, right? Like, these systems are so useful for chunking a bunch of information and then going in and researching and pulling out. Like, it's such a good interface for text and info, right?
Yeah.
So the research task, I've been doing the same thing. I've been spinning off agents to go and research things, pull up papers, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It's so helpful.
Yeah, but what I found... Like, go ahead.
Mm. I was gonna say that would have taken you like probably an hour out of your way to go and figure that out, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, well, like I would have done, I would have done the same thing. Like I've got like it'll give me source information, like links back to the documentation, or if it found a blog post that thinks relevant, I would have done the same thing in Google. But you're right, it's gonna take me an hour to do it, and since just sort of summarize all the info, read it all, but. Now I've got a nice little concise summary, and if I don't believe it, I've got all of its source links, and I can go hunt it down, right? If I needed to dig into it further. I'm going to give this one a really good test because I think it gave me some really interesting options to try to trace down where this disconnect is happening between the load balancer and what's behind it. So I'm like, I'm already changing my mind. I said after this, I'm just going to push my chair away from the desk and go do something else. I'm like, maybe I should do that. So I'm gonna test it out and just see what it does. The last thing I want to say though is on that context, and I'm sort of dispatching those agents. What I found was, I can't remember exactly what it was. It was a research card, but it was related to a project that I was working on. Okay, so it wasn't able to go out to like AWS documentation and source it and stuff. And this poor little agent, man, I'm like, blah, 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 I gave it whatever it was. I'm like, go research this. And it came back and I'm just like, what the hell are you talking about? And then I realized, I was like, oh, I put this thing at a disadvantage. It couldn't access OpenBrain because I hadn't wired up the MCP in OpenBrain to allow those connections. It just wouldn't work, right?
So, gotcha. Yeah.
Little bit of help. Described it as a GitLab issue, right? Tasked the agent with to go fix that for OpenBrain. And now those dispatched agents, if they decide they need access to my context, can now hit OpenBrain from that little Fargate cluster. And kind of prove my point, like the quality difference. I ran the dispatch again. So you saw the first one and it was just, I swear, I was just making stuff up, right? I'm like, okay.
That's what you get when you don't have it, right? Like you get hallucinations.
Yeah, it didn't know what the hell I really wanted, right? Or it couldn't answer it properly, so it just made some stuff up. Versus the second time I ran the dispatch on it, and you could see it pulling context out of OpenBrain and even referenced all the IDs so I could go and check it night and day. So that really made that sort of dispatch agent way, way more powerful. So pretty neat, pulling the memories in the whole bit, right? Very slick. Oh, yeah. So man, I this context stuff, actually, this is, if you don't have any other personal project updates, I'm going to use that as a segue into...
It's a good segue.
Yeah, okay. So the first article is about agentic coding is a trap.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah. And the first thing I wrote down was, I'm not sure about this one.
Yeah.
I don't know how it's I feel about this.
There's some nuance here. There's a lot of nuance here, right? This was the Lars Fay article. It's
That's
a great
it.
Blog
Thank
post.
You. Yeah.
If yeah. you're interested in this kind of thing, but it's essentially like, what is these tools are can be useful, but what is the cost of using them or misusing them, rather, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I guess his main thesis is if you're abdicating some of this work to agents, then you're missing out on the value of learning or sharpening your skills, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I wanted to get your opinion on this because I know you've been going full hard into the agentic yeah. thing, as have I, over the past 3, 4 months or 6 months now, actually. Jeez, it's May.
Yeah, I think you got started on this earlier than yeah. I did, because I remember a couple early episodes this year where I was just like, oh, I just use it to answer questions. And then I stumbled across that. People are going to hate me at some point because every chance I get to bring up that Five Levels article, Dan Shapiro, yeah. like I still talk about it. And that thing changed the way that I think about these systems. I've said this before and it's maybe a little pessimistic, but like, I think the ship has sailed, man. I say this all the time. It's just for the people who pay the bills, it's just math. And
yeah.
I think, and I have an analogy for this. I think a lot of this is just tied up in sentimental value. So here's my analogy, right? I was a sysadmin. That's how I got started. I loved hardware, loved working on the raised floor, loved getting all the gear working and stuff. And that to me was the value that I brought to the folks that I worked for or with, right? To the point where I had like 242U racks in my basement filled with gear because nice. that's what I thought, right? That was my value, or at least what I perceived as my value. And then cloud came along and I was like, do I really care about the hardware anymore? Like I don't care. And you know, I packed it all in the car and took it to the electronics depot, and the look on the guy's face as I kept pulling shit out of the back of the car, right? He's like, what the, right? And
how many Dells in there?
Yeah. Oh, I still have a stack of hard drives in my basement for all that, because I'm like, I'm not throwing these drives out. Like I can't make myself just dump those in a landfill. I don't know what the hell's on them, like nothing important, but I'm like, I just can't make myself do it. So I got a big stack
that's
of drives.
A gold mine now.
Yeah, right. Oh yeah, absolutely. But my point is, like, I think that's what we're seeing here, right? I think a lot of people perceive that their value is the fact that they understand every nuance of the code. And I just think, and I'm thinking about this completely wrong, I think there's a certain sentimental value attached to that, that people maybe are attaching too much value to. That I don't know, man. That's just the take on this was, I just, at the beginning of the year, I think I would have thought of it the same way. No. I have to write the code. And
yeah,
it hasn't taken long. Like, it's mid-May and I'm like, I don't need to write the code. I don't want to write the code. I'm more interested in doing this stuff now than I was at the beginning of the year, because this has opened up so many possibilities that I don't think I would have been capable of doing by myself in the time frame that I've done them in. I don't know. I'm ranting. What do you think?
I think I agree with you to a point, but it's like it depends who you are, right? Like, from our perspective, we're in IT and cloud, right? So most of our job is understanding complex systems and then implementing infrastructure and maintaining it reliably, right? Mm-hmm. For a lot of those, the actual implementation of those tasks, it's not that challenging work, realistically, right? Like, you're editing a config file, you're defining infrastructure spec. It has to be correct, obviously, right? Yeah. Or it's expensive, but the actual implementation is not, there's a high volume, but it's not super challenging, right?
Yeah.
If you're this guy, or you're like a top contributor at like a fan company, or you're writing FFmpeg or some other huge open source repo, and you're deep in the weeds of that system, I can see why maybe you'd be like, Okay, this isn't actually that great for me because the system still isn't at the edge of like it can't necessarily do that work yet, right? And I say yet because they're
Yet. Oh,
pushing as
yeah.
hard as they can
Oh,
to make it do that.
yeah.
But at the same time, there's also the aspect of if you abdicate like any kind of critical thought or writing is a tough one for me. Like writing like blog posts, for example, or even like taking notes, I struggle with the idea of because it's like if you're writing something, you have to take it into your head and you have to transform it and actually synthesize it to something worth writing, right? So that's where I struggle with this, and I can see what he's saying in that department, but for just writing code, I don't. It's just code, you know?
I'm so with you on the note-taking thing. Like, how many note-taking transcribing services do we need for our video calls? Like, I turn them on. I turn them on, right? I think the important question is, do you actually ever read them? You don't, right? Like
No,
well,
those are
I
for
shouldn't
sales
say,
teams.
yeah, I wouldn't say you don't, but I would say the vast majority of people will never look at those transcripts ever again, right?
More than likely
And
not, unless you're like doing a high volume of calls, right? And you need to go back and check what
But
happened,
see,
but
that, I think if you're doing a high volume of calls, that's where an agent actually could help you. The recording and the transcription is one thing, but feeding that into a system to help you manage the volume of it, to say, give me a concise overview of what this is, who needs to do what, when does it need to be done, like so you can get actual action items out of that, I think it's valuable. But if you're just recording calls to record calls, you're probably better off writing your own notes because it, like you said, it'll stick in your head. But if you're relying on the tools to record that and never look at it again, what's the value of doing it, right? So I'm trying to write more stuff as well. I also struggle on the blog post side. I've found, I think, a decent compromise for me, how I can have an agent help me actually get through the process of writing a blog post. So I use OpenBrain. Like I'm like, I need an article idea, right? Because there's so much stuff just getting thrown at me all the time, and I know there's good info in there that other people want to learn about, right? But I have a hard time figuring out what's noise from what's valuable. So I basically say, hey, look at what we did this week and give me one or two ideas that you think would be valuable. And I don't let it go any further. It just gives me those two or three things and I'm like, okay, I don't want you to write anything. Give me an outline. Give me like one or two sections that would make sense. And then I fill in the blanks of all of like, it's like, these are the sections. This is what I think the intent should be for that section and why. And then I write. Like I write that actual stuff. But I think you're spot on with like note taking and writing, those kinds of things. I struggle with the code part of it. I don't know, right?
It's like, what's your goal, right? If you're writing something, ostensibly your goal is to create a useful piece for other people to enjoy or find useful. And if you're letting an agent write that piece, how much value is there in that? Like you're just going to get an average piece of, or at most an average piece of writing, right? That would maybe, and I've experimented with this a little bit, and the results are not super impressive. But I do like the idea. It goes back to like what these systems are designed for, and by these systems, I mean like these second brain kind of parasystems, right? Like I said, Alcasten, it's just like an organizational system for notes for scholars to write papers, right? So it certainly works for that, for storing useful info.
It, you know what? This is worth a read, right? Like this is a good article. It's worth a read. I think you have to take it with the right context. Like your personal situation is going to be unique, right? And I think it's one of the things that I found very challenging when I first sort of read that five levels thing, right? Like I was like, oh, but I'm the CloudFormation guy. And then it's like, am I like, do I need to be do I need to write all 500 lines of that YAML code or YAML temp? Probably not, right? But it did take me, in fairness, it did take me a long time to be okay with that. And I still find myself, I might have said this last week, I still find myself every once in a while having that little thing, right? That feeling. And you're like, oh, and I'm like, no, no, no. The agent can do this, right? Task it and verify it. Make sure you give it good information. Let it do its job. That's what it's good for. And then you move on with the next thing, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I hope I'm not wrong, because I've invested a lot of my my year 2026 in this. But I don't know.
I don't think you're wrong, especially because you're coming from like a small business owner perspective, basically, right?
Yeah.
So this is doing a lot of tasks for you that you, and gives you more time to do other things ostensibly in that role, in that capacity. It's also, again, it's like, it's a useful tool. It's just, you need to know how to use it properly, right?
Yeah.
He says something, let me see what he says. He says coding is equals planning, essentially, right? And he has something in here saying that, like, what you say isn't necessarily what you mean, right? And the more
that is true,
it's the product design problem, right? Like, you don't necessarily know what you're trying to build when you set out to build it, so translating that into English is hard, right?
It is. Yeah.
But these things are really good at writing little pieces of a big thing right now, and they're only going to get better. So,
but I think we could argue the flip side of that too, based on that Simon Willison article we talked about last week, right? And the sort of the takeaway from that was design is the new bottleneck. And
yeah,
you could extrapolate from what you just said is, you know, what we're talking about here is the design part of it, like translating your idea into words that can be used properly or interpreted correctly by these tools that we have access to. That's design, and that's the bottleneck, because to your point, that is really hard to do.
Yeah.
I'm gonna use one of my recommendations right now. I can't remember if we talked about this already, but that Grill Me skill, does that ring a bell?
So good. I use that all the time.
Oh my God. Right?
Yep.
Like, I don't remember if I talked about it last week or not, but I've been using it a lot, and talk about making sure you can articulate your idea with enough detail that it makes sense, right? It's not like one or two paragraphs and you're like, enter, let's see what happens, right? I guess that would be true vibe coding, and we're just going to kind of keep iterating on it. This feels much more structured. It's not perfect, but I've found it very valuable over the last week or so to really, if I get stuck somewhere, like I'm not using it all the time, but if I know I'm having a hard time trying to take what's in my head and turn it into something that's usable, I'll just say, let's start a Grill Me session on X. And away we go. It's really, really good.
Yeah, really totally. Good. Like, this is one of Matt Pocock's skills. He's had some really good talks at the AI Engineer Conference recently.
Yeah.
But essentially what this does is it's like a Socratic questioning method for your agent to go through whatever topic you're trying to reason about, right?
Yeah.
So whether you're starting a new project or what have you, or tackling a particular problem, it kind of breaks it down, asks you to clarify various details about it, which is important because these things work best when they can work in small chunks.
Right? Small chunks. So. Yeah. Yeah. Very good. I'll say one more thing about this article that we're still talking about. The other thing that grabbed me was as soon as I see an article vendor lock-in, I immediately go, oh, here we go. Right. Like I'm not disagreeing. Right. And I think there is lots of potential challenges with vendor lock-in with these tools. And I'm thinking specifically about memories or context and stuff like that. It's in the vendor's best interest to keep those memories in its system, because just like IDEs and all the customization and the plugins and shit that you put into those things, the more time you invest in that system, the less likely you are to move because it's too painful.
Yeah.
Right?
This is why I'm so skeptical of Claude Code, but go on.
Well, see, let's dig into that a little bit. Why? What's leading to the skepticism with Claude Code?
Oh, solely the fact that they haven't open sourced it yet. You know, we had that leak for the source code, sure, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They seem to be hell bent on keeping it as obfuscated and as murky as possible for anyone to integrate with. Okay. And yeah, that's the main reason.
So see, I'm taking it. I understand what you're saying. I'm taking it, I think, from a bit of a different perspective. When I think about vendor lock-in with these, I'm thinking about my memories, my context, the discussions that I'm having. So I don't necessarily care what's under the hood, but I want to own those memories. I want to own the context, right? And that, I think, is, for me, the biggest potential problem for individual developers, for people who work for small companies, for very large enterprises, because if you invest so much time and energy and you just keep feeding all of, I'll just continue to use the term memories, right? You're feeding all of your memories into tool of choice. Could you imagine the heavy lifting, or I'll use the old term technical debt, if I want to think of it that way, to get all of that out of there? Because if you just turned off tool A today and said, well, starting on Thursday morning, you're using tool B, I think we've talked about this. It's going to set you back weeks, right? Because
weeks, months, years, maybe, if you use it for a long time, right?
So I'm thinking the important part of this is that context. Are the memories. Like, I know when I'm working with Claude is still writing its own memories, right? It's saying, like, I'm saying, don't do that. And it's like, okay, I'll add it to my memory. I don't necessarily care about that, but I want the context of the projects that I'm working on, the goals for those projects or those customers. I want them stored outside of whatever tool I'm using so that I can just use another tool and say, go get what you need out of OpenBrain. It's over here. It has an MCP. And this is the project we're working on for Customer X. Go find it. And if you need more help finding stuff, ask me. So that was the other thing I wrote down around this. Like, the vendor lock-in just triggered that for me. And I was like, I can see his point. Like, you know, vendor lock-in with a cloud provider, I just don't believe. You can't convince me.
You can Dockerize.
Yeah, you can't convince me. I would say there's some risks for vendor lock-in with these tools, and the vendors are making it like that because of this idea of memories that exist within that specific tool. I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if one of these companies at some point this year, maybe in the next couple of months, is like, your memories are now uploaded to our cloud and they're tied to your account. And if your account gets banned, you lose all that context info, right?
Yeah.
That's like you said, that would be vendor lock-in for sure.
Yeah.
Which again, makes me a little suspicious of Anthropic personally, which is why I've been leaning towards Pi and Open Code and Codex recently.
But. Yeah. I have sunk into Claude too much. I say this every week again. I don't listen back to these because it's weird to listen to yourself. But I should feed it into, speaking of Claude, I should feed it into Claude and go, tell me the themes that I talk about every week endlessly. And I bet you I talk about the same shit. But like, yeah, I understand what you mean. I get it. I think that's why Second Brain, Open Brain systems are so important.
We need a standard. We need a memory standard, like an open source, something like that.
Yeah, that would be interesting. That's another reason why these little desktop things like Amazon Quick, the Codex app, like the Amazon Quick app looks really cool. And it's got, you know, over time, as it learns more about you, it helps kind of build, well, context and give you better responses and tell you a little bit more about the people that you're talking to and stuff. I'm reluctant because where does that go? And if I decide I don't want to use Amazon Quick anymore or other tool, right? I'm just using Amazon Quick as the example. Well, that's my shit. So how do I get it back out of there so I can feed it into another system? And I would not be surprised if somebody at some point goes, oh, you just click here and you download it. But it's in a format that nothing else will ever be able to properly understand. They're like, well, it's yours.
Sure.
It's useless in the form that we're going to give it to you, but it's yours and you can download it anytime you want.
I mean, I guess unless they encrypt it with the key before they give it to you, or they don't decrypt it when you download it, then someone will reverse engineer that, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, I
But
guess.
yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they just stored that in an AWS server somewhere, and that's where it is, and you can't get it.
Well, this article has definitely triggered a conversation. I think it's worth a read. And you know, just think about sort of the topics that he's discussing. I think they're valuable. I don't necessarily buy all of them, but I think it's valuable, right? Okay, what's next? I love this one. Teaching Claude why. Walk us through this research.
Okay. So this is from the Anthropic blog. But essentially the gist of it is that do you remember when Claude, they were running those alignment experiments and it would blackmail people for more token dollars, essentially? It turns out that the reason that was happening is because there was essentially talk or discussions or content about bad actor AI agents in the training set. And they hadn't tuned it out. They weren't tuning it out necessarily, but they weren't like tuning for it. It just kind of emerged because it was in the corpus of data.
That's awesome.
So it turns out if you have Terminator in the training set, that can lead to some problems.
Well, isn't this sort of like there was an article, and I should have shared it, about OpenAI and goblins.
The goblins thing is really funny too.
Right,
talking about the goblins
we
thing?
Didn't we did, you just but... you just made me
oh,
think of it
crazy.
Because you're like,
oh,
if that's
God.
In the corpus, you will see it. And I was kind of thinking, isn't that kind of what happened with goblins at some point? It just kind of self-fulfilling.
Goblins? Why haven't I seen any goblins? What the heck?
What's going on? Yeah, you know, this was timely because I think this idea of you know, teaching Claude like to understand why something is happening is really important, especially when it does something that you didn't expect and you ask it why it did it, right? And this just happened to me. Just happened to me this week. Yeah. And it did something. What was it? Oh, I was asking it to help me with a CI script. And I had the CI script going into environment A. And I had to put it into another environment. And this to me is a perfect example of like, I don't want to write a CI script that I already wrote for a different environment. So why should I do that, right? So I'm like, okay, I need this for environment B. Yeah, no problem. And I'm like, there's one little thing you have to be aware of. Environment B, how we get access to it is slightly different than how you're getting access to environment A. And I explained to it why that difference existed, right? This is sort of the legacy environment. We used an access method there that we've sort of decided we're not going to do anymore. So in environment B, you do it this way. I got it, no problem. So away it goes. And it does its thing. And I deploy everything into environment B. And it works. CI script runs, CloudFormation works its magic, and the infrastructure's there. I verify it. I ask a guy to stand up a couple machines to test it out, make sure all the routing works. No problems. We don't rip the infrastructure down. We rip the test instances down, and we move on with our lives. The next day, all right, I get a request, and I want to push it into environment A first. Because that's our lower tiered environment. I want to test it there. So I go, and it was just like, I can't remember what it was. Let's say it's a new role or something. I had to put something in there. So it was like 5 minutes work. I'm not going to explain that to Claude. I'll just do it myself. It's quicker. So I do it. I submit it into GitLab, and it fails. The whole fucking thing fails. Like not a single job works. And I'm like,
wow.
I'm like, what the hell happened here? This worked yesterday afternoon. So I go and I look at it. And what it had done was it had taken the new access method. Even though I told it the two environments were different, don't touch the first one, but just duplicate it and change this. It took all of that and put it in the original environment. So it couldn't act. GitLab could no longer, the runner couldn't access that environment anymore. So I asked it, why? Why'd you do this? And the thing is, like, it's funny. I don't have kids, but I could imagine this is what it would be like talking to your 4-year-old, right? Why did you do that?
Down.
Yeah. Why did you do that?
Around.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I did that. I'm sorry. I'm like, okay, that's fine. You're sorry. I get it. But that's not what I asked you. Like, why did you do it? Yeah. I'll just make a memory that not to do it again. I'm like, oh my God. Right. Like, and
this, it's like, you just got lucky, right? Like the reality is you pulled the slot machine on that one and you came
out
bad, unfortunately.
Yeah. Right. But. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I pulled the slot machine handle and it didn't do exactly. But this idea of it being able to understand and I think articulate why you're asking it to do something, or if it gets asked, why did you do that? That it comes back with, well, to borrow the word, right? Reasoning. Like, tell me why you did it. Not just, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done it. I won't do it again. I'm like, that's not what I'm asking you. Right. Please don't do it again, but just explain to me so I understand why you did it this time.
We want to know why the failure mode happened, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I don't know. I hope I'm not missing the sort of the intent of this article, but that's kind of what I took away from it, probably just because of the recent experience I had with it and trying to get it to tell me why it did something.
Well, it's really interesting, right? Like, so essentially the crux of the article is if you give it good training data and context on how to behave properly, that improves behavior for agentic systems, right? Mm-hmm. But it kind of reminds me of what we talked about with Dr. Bauer on the guest episode, right? There's some, you're going to need some kind of intent detection if you really want to do good guardrails for this kind of stuff. And it's something I've kind of noticed come up over the past few weeks as people are moving from, first we were talking about like prompt engineering, get your prompts right, but then it was context engineering, get the context to work well. And now I think it's moving to, is the thing actually doing what your intention is for it to do, right? Like, how well does that translate? So that's probably where the next step for getting good results out of agentic tools, in my opinion.
Prompt engineering.
Yeah,
that was a career that came and went in the blink of an eye.
Do you remember the job posting?
It was $300,000 to be a prompt engineer. I'm like, oh man, I'm doing the wrong thing. I'm gonna go prompt engineer.
Yeah, right?
Didn't last long.
That didn't last.
So what's next? Okay, the next one is on my watch list in YouTube, but I did not get a chance to actually watch it. So this is, oh crap. Hold on. Do you have the title of it?
To YouTube.
Oh, Dark Factory.
Dark Factory.
Come on, right up my alley, right? I was like,
there you go.
Ooh.
It's your favorite.
Yeah, it's my favorite. I totally am going to watch this. I just ran out of time. Tell me about it.
So this is kind of, I mean, it's funny, but this is a good transition. Essentially, what they're talking about is to get an agentic system to ship well or reliably, you need to think about intent. And it's kind of like one of the pieces I've noticed for this kind of intent engineering thing. But the reason that how to get systems like OpenClaw working well, you know, because it's like an autonomous bot that's turning away and picking things up every so often, a lot like your Kanban system, actually.
Yep.
Is you need to engineer the intent for what you want, which is kind of what you're doing in terms of you have context in OpenBrain and you have a skill that's go and go do this task, right?
Mm-hmm.
But similar to that.
Yeah.
And it's another AI engineer conference video I thought was really interesting. And Vincent Koch is the speaker, KOC.
Is it just me, or are those videos like absolutely fantastic?
The whole conference has been amazing.
Yeah.
I've been picking them up here and there, kind of one or two a day for the past like week or so.
Yeah.
It's been great.
They get mixed in with my bro camping / cooking videos.
Have you gotten to stealth camping videos yet?
Oh man, yeah. Come on.
Oh yeah.
My favorite one ever. It was like, it was in Canada. The dude stealth camped in a roundabout, like in the middle.
Oh yeah. That's
And there's like cars driving around. He parks in the parking lot across the street and then waits for no cars and sneaks into the trees in the middle and, you know, makes his macaroni and cheese and shit in the middle of the, I'm like, oh, come on. This is fantastic. Yeah. Stealth camping, definitely on my watch list, just because they said they had me at Dark Factory.
your favorite term.
I got to watch it, right? So I'm going to share some thoughts on this one next week because I just ran out of time. The other thing that came up when I did click that video was another conference talk about Pi and OpenClaw.
Oh, yeah.
And again, no context whatsoever, right? Have you watched that?
Yeah. It's worth watching. Okay. OpenClaw uses the Pi SDK as part
Of
their
core
loop.
Okay. Yeah. Did not know that. Okay. What's next? Oh, you lost me when I saw Kubernetes in the title. There's one benchmarking, retrieval strategies, Kubernetes. Walk us through that one.
Okay. So this is, I mean, you might be happy to hear that it's not actually about deploying or running Kubernetes, but this is the Kubernetes code base.
Okay.
That you're working on.
Yeah.
Fellow DevOps engineers out there will know.
Yeah.
But essentially this was, how do you benchmark the performance of coding agents over huge code bases? So the Kubernetes code base is something on the order of a million lines of code, right?
Wow. Yep.
And essentially what they try to do here is, can you use RAG only to retrieve useful data? Can you use hybrid, which is RAG plus like a local search or local files? Or can you use local only, which is like clone, grep, find, cat, only basically the new utils, right?
Mm-hmm.
To explore the code base. And essentially they were talking about what works best for these kind of big systems. The main takeaway is that it all comes down to getting the right context into the agent's context field to be able to solve the bugs that you're trying to point it at, right? And CCD systems, again, like we said, tend to break down at huge levels of scale.
Okay. That sounds interesting. I'm probably not going to read it. Lost me at Kubernetes. But you know what? You said something. You said the word again in there. Context. I think this is the context episode. I've droned on and on about it. Right. I can't stop thinking about the importance of context. Right. It used to be what was the thing that bloggers and stuff would say? They're like, content is king or content is key or something. Context is king now. Like, that's the way it's going to be.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, there you go. The last article on the list was three things in AI to watch according to a Nobel-winning economist. And I apologize. I actually subscribed to this and I shared it. And I'm actually not sure if it's maybe paywalled or not. It's on Technology Review. MIT
it's
Technology.
Not,
it's not? Okay.
It's not paywalled yet.
Okay. Okay. So I thought this was really good. I didn't write down the economist's name. I should have done that in my notes so I wouldn't have to remember.
Darren Acemoglu.
Okay. He made a bunch of predictions, sort of took the opposite take for a lot of the doom and gloom of what AI would do to the economy for individual people, right? His take was, it's going to affect jobs, but there are a lot of jobs that it's just not going to be able to do. And, it's going to be fine for most people. So they brought him back and asked some new questions. And I just made some really quick cheat sheet notes on the three things. He talked about AI agents, right? And he said that he thinks it's important for us to remember that AI agents are still just tools. And you shouldn't be thinking about an agent as a way to replace an entire person's job.
No.
Yeah.
Certainly not.
Yeah. So, I don't know what there is to say about that. I think there's so much hype around like agents doing everything. I think this is just a nice, more realistic approach to thinking about these. They're just tools that we've had in different forms for a very long time. And I'll give you an example of what I think he means by that. But you shouldn't think of them to replace somebody. So, I hope he's right. The pessimist in me says probably not, but. The other one is that they're noticing AI companies, they were originally paying huge dollars for, you know, big data scientist folks, you know, AI sort of engineering folks. And now they're paying big dollars for people with economic skills. So like economists. There we go. I feel like Elmer Fudd again. So, you know, his comment in the article was there's increasingly or increasing skepticism from the public on what AI is going to do, right, to regular people, how it's going to affect their lives, their jobs and stuff like that. And his take is he hopes this isn't true, right? But his take is that these companies are spending lots of money on these smart folks in order to basically shape or control the narrative of how AI will affect economies in the future so that, you know, they get to tell the story versus sort of having the story imposed on them. Again, I hope that's not true, but that was sort of, I think, his take in the article. Again, I wouldn't be surprised if that's what's happening. And then finally, the last thing he said was AI apps, right? And he used a great analogy. He's like, AI apps, they're easy to install, but that doesn't necessarily mean just because it's easy to install that it translates immediately into sort of impact that you can see. And I thought his example was really good. He's like, compare it to the tools that we've had for a long time, something like PowerPoint. Anybody could install PowerPoint and you could get value out of that tool immediately. Like you could use it very easily, very quickly to help explain your ideas to somebody. And his point is that you can install these tools very quickly and very easily, but the time it takes to start having value or drive impact from those tools is the runway is much longer than sort of the previous generation of tools. And it's funny because I'm thinking again about Amazon Quick Desktop, Codex app.
Right.
Like the you have to invest a lot of time and energy. You just don't plunk it in there and hit a couple things and you're like, ta-da, magic. You have to invest a lot of time and energy. Again, unless I'm completely missing the mark on these things. Without that upfront time investment, the value that you get out of the tools is very low. And somebody was talking about this with OpenClaw. Yeah. Like you install OpenClaw, great. But if you are not fine-tuning that tool, you know, writing skills, or, you know, if you're not into worrying about where those skills came from, installing somebody else's skills, the value of that, you're not going to get a lot of value out of it. You're going to say, I have an OpenClaw instance, but what's it really doing for you, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I think this is a pretty neat article. It's again, I think, more sober take on sort of all the hype and the things that gets the types of articles that get clicks and people talking about.
Yeah, I think that's Cromulent. Like, I agree. Like, you need some expertise to be able to use this properly in a software engineering context. You're going to need all of the like local company organizational context, right, to be able to do anything useful in an org anytime soon. And code is not the entire job, right? Just taking it back to a programming context, code is like the execution of the ideas that you implement, right? Like you're thinking of a feature, you need to solve a particular problem, you're solving that by coding it. Well, I guess you're encoding it in code, right? So yeah, that all makes total sense to me. It's like, we're gonna end up somewhere in between the data center full of geniuses or whatever and this take, right? Or the AI is totally useless take, right? It's gonna be somewhere between.
The outcome usually lies in the middle between the two extremes, right? So you're right. It's going to land in the middle somewhere. So that's it, man. That's all our articles.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah. There was a lot of stuff there today. And that first one, man, just got us in. The article itself was a trap. I think we could have filled the entire hour and change with that thing.
Easily.
Yeah. Easily. You want to wrap us up with a couple recommendations?
Oh my goodness. Recommendations. What am I doing with my life this week? Kaggle's cool.
Yeah.
If you're into data science, you should check out Kaggle. What else? We watched movies, but I don't remember what we watched, which is maybe not the best. How about you?
Yeah,
you
might speak to the quality of the movies you watched.
Yeah.
I've got a couple things, and I think I might take back one of my recommendations for last week, and I'll explain why. So the first thing is totally not related to work. Speaking of YouTube videos, I watched one of those YouTube videos. It was like top strategy games of 2026. And then my entire feed for like a day was top games of this, top games of that. And I couldn't not watch, right? And that led directly to me spending money in Steam. And I found a game called Tavern Keeper.
Oh my God, I've heard of this.
So much fun. You literally open your first tavern in a swamp. And you serve ale that is delivered to your swamp tavern with, I think, like a giant ogre who like pushes a boat up the river, and you buy beer from them. Like there's probably nothing wrong with beer sold in a boat by an ogre.
Surely not. I mean, it's probably the best beer you've ever had, honestly.
Well, my patrons seem to think so. So it is so much fun. It's just a silly little game that it's not one of those games where you're going to get yourself worked up about. You can just kill an hour or two playing this game. It's fun. It's only single player.
Fun sim.
Yeah, it's a fun little business kind of sim game, right? It's only a single player. I think it would be even more fun if you could play it with your friends, but I can't quite figure out how you would play a business sim like that with your friends, but it's fun. So there's that. The next thing I want to recommend is a little toolbar app that somebody recommended to me in a Discord channel today. It's called the Codex Bar. And it is not what you think, right? It's not Codex app. It is a widget, I guess, a Mac widget, whatever you want to call it, that tells you about your token usage across whatever tools you have installed. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I slightly feel shame about how many tokens I've used in Claude.
Hey, it's part of a subscription. Don't even.
No, I know. Well, you know what's funny? Like, I've been talking to this person and I listen to how much they're using it and also has a Claude Max plan, right? And I was like, well, like, how do I find the metrics that they give you. It's unless I get throttled, like, I don't know how much of what I'm allowed to use in a month I'm actually using. I will tell you, okay?
Okay.
Today, I've used 21 million tokens.
Okay.
Okay? In the last 30 days, do you want to guess how many tokens in Claude I've used?
30 days?
In 30 days.
21 million today you did?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Are you at like 2 billion yet?
Yeah, 2.5 billion tokens.
Okay. That's crazy.
That's awesome. I don't know if I should feel. No, I know. The irony is the conversation in Discord went like this. Oh, that's cool. They shared a link. I downloaded it because I'm like, I want to, like, am I getting value from this? And then I posted the little screenshot and the other comment was, I think you're getting value.
I think you might be getting your money's worth.
Just a little, right? Yeah, just a little. So I don't know if I feel shame about that or I'm okay with it. It goes back to the thing we were talking about it earlier. It took me a little while to feel okay with this, but 2.5 billion tokens.
Surprised. It's on them, right? At this point.
Yeah.
That might change. That might change sometime soon. But,
So, and just to compare, in the real Codex, ChatGPT or whatever you want to call it, I have used 352,000 tokens in today, which I don't even know how I would have done that. The only thing I can think of is maybe I have the Codex app running in the background somewhere, and I've used 2 million tokens in 30 days versus 2.5 billion.
How much would that be in API spend?
they give you an estimate, actually.
Does it tell you?
Oh my God. Yeah. You want to take a guess?
Okay. So is that Opus usage?
Or is that Sonnet? Primarily Opus.
Okay. And Opus is what, $15 per million out? Is that output tokens?
They don't really give you that level of detail. They just say how many tokens you've used.
Are you getting more than 5 grand of value out of this thing?
Well, no, it's not that good. I wish I could. It's still a number that I found a little shocking. It's $1,700 they're estimating the token cost. So I'm getting value out of it.
It's pretty good.
I'm gonna tell my buddy about this because he used so much Claude that he went from the Claude Max 5X plan to the 20X plan. So I'm going to send this to him tonight and say, you need to install this because I want to see how many tokens you're using. So you
I'm gonna
should
install it too and check.
you should install it. You should install it. And oh, and also it picked up Gemini. What's Gemini?
Zero.
It's almost zero. Let's see. Flash. Where's
That's
the Oh, it
crazy.
actually doesn't show me the same token output that
Oh.
the other ones do. So I have 100% left of Flash Lite, and I have 95% left of Flash. So I haven't used it.
Okay.
But yeah, and
I mean,
the oh, go ahead.
it's got its uses, but
Yeah.
yeah, not my go-to.
Yeah, I've had a hard, increasingly harder time to figure out what its uses are. But I should probably give it another fair shake. I was trying to demo. This is a great example of why I run into problems with this tool. I was trying to demo OpenBrain for somebody,
Oh, yeah.
and I was like, okay, so if I do this in Claude, you can see it show up in the activity stream. It tags it with the agent that it came from, the project, blah, blah, blah. So then I'm like, watch, I can show you from Gemini. So I go to Gemini. It has the same MCP, right? And I'm like, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, I wrote that to OpenBrain. I'm like, are you sure? It's not there, man. Like, I'm like madly clicking refresh on the screen. It's not there. So then I went to Kiro, did the same thing. Kiro wrote it. I still don't know what happened to what
It's
Gemini
Gemini. It's
told
just
me it
Gemini.
did. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just
Weird.
that's just Gemini being Gemini. It's not good at using tools. It's
Yeah.
I don't know what they did. They haven't tuned it for it, but
It.
it's really good at like image multimodal tasks,
Yeah.
like
I
one shot
remember you
image
telling me that.
tasks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It told me multiple times that it put it in OpenBrain, and
Oh yeah.
I even got to the point where I'm like, are you sure you don't mean Obsidian? Those words both begin with O. Like, are you sure? Right? It's like, nope, it's in there. And I'm like, okay, give me the memory ID. Oh, I can't do that. There's no tool, there's no MCP. And I'm like, dude, there is. I'm looking right at it over here. There is one. So anyways, yeah, poor Gemini. And then my anti-recommendation or my recommendation that I maybe want to take back is the Frequency Era book.
Okay, good, because I didn't read
Don't bother. Don't
Okay.
bother. Unless it takes another turn somewhere, it got a little too it's sort of we were both really wrong on what we believe the frequency is. The
Okay.
frequency that I'm understanding so far is more like an internal thing. It feels more like a physical sort of how your internal systems are. I don't know, man.
Okay, so
I
this is like some woo stuff going
yeah.
on. There's like
It
some weird vibes.
it's like some new era or new
New age
wavey
stuff.
stuff. New age, thank you. New wave is cool music from the 80s, right? New
Yeah.
age is what I meant. Yeah, it took a really weird turn, and I keep going back to it and just kind of churning through pages, hoping it takes another turn for me, but it hasn't yet, and I've really
Okay.
slowed down on the consumption of that book. I kind of gone back to some fiction instead. So I'll
Nice.
keep reading it, but yeah, save your cash. Spend it on tokens
Skip it.
instead.
Perfect.
Perfect.
No problem. Easy to
Yeah, there
do.
you go. There you go. All right, man. Well, that's another episode in the book, and we will see everybody back next Wednesday for another episode
Where we'll have.
where you'll hear me drone on about the importance of context.
Yep, it'll be
Yeah.
another week and another podcast.
Yes.
And that's probably how it'll start.
Yep. And you
Yeah.
know what I'm going to play right now?
What's that?
The intro music, because I still didn't change the outro. I need to put it in the
Same as it
Kanban
ever
board,
was.
man. Yeah, same as it ever
Put
was.
in
There's a great old new wave song. You could listen to some Talking Heads.
Yeah, talking heads.
Yeah,
Yeah.
same as it always was. All right, man. We'll see everybody next week.
So I built this MCP.